All right, well, good evening to all of you. Welcome to our Wednesday study. We are continuing here through the book of Exodus. And last time we kind of stopped in the early part of chapter 6. And so we're going to kind of pick up again at the beginning of chapter 6. But just by way of a review and sort of regrounding us in terms of where we are in this unfolding account here of Moses and Aaron and them confronting Pharaoh and everything. We saw in chapter 5 that just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, they did go in to Pharaoh, and they spoke the words that the Lord told them to speak. And when they did so, instead of Pharaoh just saying, "All right, great, your God has told you to go out into the wilderness and worship, you know, go ahead and do so," instead, not only did he not allow them to do that and basically reject that, but he actually made things worse for the people. What he did was, we saw that he required that the Egyptians who had previously provided the Jewish slaves with straw to make the brick, he basically said, "I want you to continue to make the same quota of bricks, but we're not giving you any straw. You got to go and gather your own." So there was like an additional burden in preparing or creating these bricks. But they still were required to produce the same amount, and they were punished to the extent that they weren't able to do so. And so we saw that not only did the children of Israel get really angry, and they were frustrated, and they felt humiliated. They were angry at Moses because they were thinking to themselves, even though they were in slavery and they were living this life of slavery, which was really hard, they were saying to Moses, like, you know, this is crazy, right? You know, before you came along, we were doing just fine, you know, being slaves and everything. And then now it's actually getting worse. And so that's something that happened. But it even got to the point where it affected Moses as well. Even though, you know, Moses had been dealing directly with the Lord, and the Lord, he'd seen, you know, heard words directly from the true and the living God, from the Almighty, and he saw all the signs that the Lord had shown him and everything else. He himself was starting to doubt, and he forgot what the Lord told him, because the Lord had spoke when he was speaking to him out of the burning bush. He made it clear that when you first go to Pharaoh, he's not going to listen to you, and it's not until, you know, I stretch forth my hand and strike him, strike, you know, Egypt, that he will let him go. And so we saw in the first part of chapter 6 that although the children of Israel were depressed or dejected or, you know, hurt, angry, frustrated, confused, and everything else, with regard to the Lord, this was exactly what the Lord had planned. Everything was working out exactly the way the Lord wanted it to work out. And in fact, we see in verse 1 that the Lord planned the sequence of events to occur this way so that Pharaoh and everyone else, you know, the children of Israel, everyone who is looking on, everyone who is involved with this, He uses these words in chapter 6, verse 1. He says, "Now you're going to see what I will do to Pharaoh. You're going to see me. It's with a strong hand, he will let the children of Israel go. With a strong hand, he will drive them out of his land." And so the Lord is really, this is how he wanted this to work out, because he wanted, in a sense, he wanted the children of Israel and Moses to understand that that this was not going to be happening because of their own efforts or what they could do, their intellect, their eloquence of speech or whatever, but it's going to be the power of God that is going to deliver them from their bondage. And that, you know, when you talk about, you know, applications, right, as you go along, that is something that is an application for us. And we think about, we talked about last time, like the different kinds of ways in which we can be in bondage to sin or into bad habits, to different things in our life. And we, this is as a reminder in terms of where we go, where, what the source is for being delivered, from being set free from bondage. It's the Lord who will do this. And in verse 3, we saw how the Lord was telling Moses that when he appeared to the forefathers, to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, he appeared to them as God Almighty. That was the way that he manifested himself to them, as God Almighty. So they knew him that way. But he said that, but by my name, Lord, I was not known to them. So he was not known in that way. So the point that we made last time was that the Lord is going to begin to reveal himself to Moses and to the children of Israel in this time in a way that he had not ever revealed himself before. And that is one of the things that is really neat about kind of the progression as we go through Genesis and Exodus and stuff. And that's kind of what we've been talking about, is just even the way that the Lord relates to his people, you know, over time, you know, to Adam and Eve and to Noah and to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. You know, it becomes, you know, the Lord is revealing more and more of himself. He's revealing more and more of his plan of salvation and everything else. And even, you know, as we make our way through the Word of God, the Lord is revealing himself more and more, to the point where now, in the time that we're living, we've seen even more than what Moses has seen, or we know about, right, about the, you know, Jesus being born and dying and resurrecting and all these different things. So there's just more and more revelation in that fashion. But the Lord is saying, you're going to see me as the God who makes promises and the God who keeps promises. And so he goes on in verse 4 to say, I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage in which they were strangers. And, you know, so the Lord is recounting the promises that he made, that, I made these promises, in effect, is what the Lord is saying, and I'm going to keep them. I'm going to follow through. This is going to happen. And so don't be discouraged by Pharaoh's first reaction. This is going to happen. And so he's going to go on to begin to talk to Moses about what he's going to do to be really clear with him. And that, it's one of these things where it's kind of like, the Lord is telling Moses in advance the great things that he's going to accomplish, so that when they do happen, then that's going to be something that is going to provide even greater faith for Moses and for anyone else who would read this later or would know about this. So let's look at verse 5 of chapter 6. It says, and I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. So not only is God who makes covenants, makes promises and keeps them, we also see that God is a seeing God. you know, God is one, you know, and that's what distinguishes God from all these false gods, false religions that are, they're blind, they're deaf, they're dumb. We have a God that hears us, he sees us, and he takes pity on us. And so he's saying, I've heard the groaning of the children of Israel. It's not like you were suffering for all these years and the Lord didn't hear your cries. And that, again, it is an encouragement for us that as we go through difficulties, through trials and different things in our lives, to just know that the God does hear us when we are groaning and when we're going through those things. And he says here that he remembered his covenant. And so then now here in verses 6, 7, and 8, he's going to go through and really provide a lot of detail about what he is going to do. So verse 6 says, therefore, say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. So the first thing is, and this is something I sort of mentioned last time, and we saw it also in verse 2 of chapter 6, where the Lord, you know, he tells Moses in verse 2, you know, I am the Lord, you know, because, you know, after Pharaoh responded the way he did, we got to a place where Moses was actually, his attention was more focused on Moses, on Pharaoh, than it was on the Lord. He was more impressed with the power that Pharaoh was exhibiting and how he was oppressing the people than he was with the promises that God was making and what God was doing. And so God in verse 2 first, you know, impresses upon Moses, remember this, I am the Lord. You know, Pharaoh may think he's the Lord. You may think that Pharaoh is the Lord, like he has all the power. He's in control of things, but I'm the really the one who is. And that's why in verse 6, he says, the first thing I want you to do is go to the children of Israel and tell them that I am the Lord. And he says, I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And so the thing about this is that, you know, those words, I will bring, that those words, what they really mean are I have and I will. That's how that is really translated. And so the point of that is that these words that the Lord is speaking are so certain that he is basically speaking of them as almost as if they've already occurred. And that's where God lives, right? God lives in the eternal present tense. So he sees things as they are. He sees them as they will be. And he's saying, I will bring you from under the burdens that you are suffering. Okay, so all of the hardship, I'm going to bring you from out from under that. Number two, I'm going to rescue you from your bondage or from your slavery. And that's a wonderful thing, you know, to just think about that the Lord, that is the role that he serves. He rescues us from our slavery. We don't have the ability to do that. And I think about, it makes me think about a Romans chapter 7, you know, when Paul talks about how even though, you know, Paul, you know, after coming to Christ, he talked about how he struggled with sin. You know, he the things that he says, the things that I want to do, I don't do. And the things that I don't want to do, I find myself doing all the time. And he goes on and he says, you know, who will, you know, rescue me from this body of sin? Like he recognized that the issue is that we're still in this flesh, we're still in this body. And so although, you know, we're born again and we're filled with the Spirit of God, we're dragging around this dead body that has this pull on us, that that makes us want to continue to live that old life of sin. And Paul says, I thank God that, you know, the Lord, you know, by his Spirit is going to rescue. And so it's the same thing. It's like that when we recognize that we need someone, we need God to rescue us, because we don't have the ability to rescue ourselves from this bondage of sin. And so that's what the Lord says. You guys are in sin. And as I said, the sequence of events was just the way the Lord wanted it to be, because he wanted to demonstrate to them, you're in bondage and you don't have the ability to get yourself out of it. And in fact, even when you go to try to extricate yourself or get yourself out of this sin and out of this bondage, it gets worse. Okay, you need me to rescue you, and I will do just that. I'm going to rescue you from this bondage. I'm going to redeem you with an outstretched arm. In other words, the Lord is going to reach out his arm, and his strength is going to go against Egypt. And he says, and with great judgments. There are going to be judgments that are going to come against Egypt because of what they did against the children of Israel. And then it says, I will take you as my people. And that's what the Lord wants. He regards them as his. They belong to him. I'm going to take you as my people. And he says, I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who helps you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And so one of the other things here is that the Lord is going, the Lord wants to show his great power here. And that kind of goes back to what the Lord said to Moses in verse 3, when it says, when I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I appeared as God Almighty, but by my name, Lord, I was not known to them. The point is, the Lord is going to reveal himself in a way that he's never revealed to any other, you know, generations before. He's going to do this great thing. I will bring you out so that you're going to be able to, you're going to know that I am the Lord, your God. And all these false gods of Egypt, they're powerless against me. I am the true and the living God, is what you're going to find out after I do this mighty work. Verse 8 says, and I will bring you into the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord. And so he's not going to just take them out of bondage. He's going to take them somewhere, right? He's going to take them to a land of promise, to a place of promise. And so likewise, you know, when the Lord sets us free, he doesn't just set us free, but he is, you know, taking us to a place, like a promised place. And it says here, he's going to give this land that he has promised as a heritage. And then we see how he ends this whole statement. He says, I am the Lord. So it's like a bookends, right? So at the beginning of verse 6, where he says, I am the Lord. And then here at the end of this statement, he says, I am the Lord. So that is a way of emphasizing when the Lord repeats himself. That's the way that he is emphasizing that statement. That's the important thing that he's saying. And again, when he says, I am the Lord, he is saying, I am a covenant-making and covenant-keeping God. Verse 9, it says, so Moses spoke thus to the children of Israel, but they did not heed Moses because of the anguish of spirit and cruel bondage. And so essentially here, because of what happened the first time, right, when he came and told them, hey, look, I'm going to go to Pharaoh and I'm going to say, let my people go. And things got worse. So they're just like, basically, they're saying, look, we don't want to hear what you have to say anymore. We don't want any part of this. It's just gotten worse. And so they didn't listen to him. And so what does Moses do? He does the right thing, right? He goes and he speaks to God, or the Lord speaks to Moses concerning this. It says, and the Lord spoke to Moses saying, go in and tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the children of Israel go out of this land. And Moses spoke before the Lord saying, the children of Israel have not heeded me. How then shall Pharaoh heed me, for I am of uncircumcised lips? And so in verse 11, the Lord speaking to Moses says, hey, go tell Pharaoh to let the children of Israel go. So he's basically saying, Moses, go get back in the game. You know, you're kind of, you know, you went and you talked to your people, but you're kind of not, now you're, you know, he's dejected, or he's feeling like, oh, this whole thing isn't going to work. And so the Lord is saying, go back and get back in the game here. But then Moses replies to the Lord and he says, I couldn't even talk to the children of Israel and get them to believe me or heed what I'm saying. In other words, I wasn't successful with the lesser people. And now you want me to go back and talk to Pharaoh. That's a harder discussion. I mean, the children of Israel, they're my people. They're on my side. They're the ones who I'm trying to rescue. And they didn't listen to me. So what makes you think that Pharaoh is going to listen to me? That's essentially what he's saying to the Lord. But then he says something else at the very end of that, which I find to be interesting. He says, I am of uncircumcised lips. And what he's really saying there is, I am morally unclean and incapable. That's what he's saying right there. And you know, the truth is that is something that it seems to me that every person who is used by God, or every person who sees God close up and gets to know who God is, they come to this conclusion. And I think one of the glaring examples of this is Isaiah, you know, in Isaiah chapter 6, when he sees, it was, you know, in the year that King Uzziah died, and he sees the Lord high and lifted up, and he says, you know, woe is me, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell amongst a people of unclean lips. It's like when you come into contact with the true and the living God, and you recognize who he is, and you recognize who you are, you realize that you are morally unclean, you are incapable. And that is the truth. That is just the reality of the situation. But, you know, the truth is that, it, you know, God uses people to accomplish his purposes. And this fact is true about every single human being. We are all morally unclean and incapable apart from Christ. And so the Lord knows that. It's not something that that is not a known thing. And so that's one of the things that, you know, as in terms of application here, is that, you know, we have to, that's something that we have to recognize, that, you know, we are incapable, we are unclean, but it's the Lord who makes us clean. He makes us clean by the finished work of Christ. So when Christ, the blood of Jesus, is applied to our lives, then now he makes us righteous, he makes us clean, and he's the one who equips us so that we are capable, we can't say that we're incapable. But he here is focused on himself, and he's basically saying to the Lord, look, I can't do this because I'm just broken, basically. I'm just not capable. And then verse 13, it says, then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron and gave them a command for the children of Israel and for Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. Now, the thing that's interesting about this is that essentially the way I read this is you know, when it says gave them a command, it's like the Lord is like, I'm not asking you anymore. I'm telling you, you know, I'm giving you a command to do this. This is not like a suggestion. I'm commanding you with regard to the children of Israel and Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land. And so now we then transition into a genealogy. And so the question is, you know, sort of what is going on here? Why is this a genealogy here? And what is this genealogy of? And I'll just say this, that two things. Number one, a genealogy, this is the genealogy of Aaron and Moses, okay? And in these times, you know, in ancient times, when you wanted to know who a person is, right? Or if a person wants to tell you who they are, it's not like our times where we say, oh, I'm a carpenter, or I'm a engineer, or I'm a teacher, or, and, you know, I have, you know, three children and I'm married to this person or whatever. We wouldn't talk about our occupation, and we wouldn't be talking about like sort of our current family and our families going forward. When you talk about who a person is in these times, you would be talking about who they're descended from, like, I'm the son of this person, who's the son of that person, who's the son of that person. That's how you identify somebody. So it's almost like you're speaking of who you are, and it's like your ID. This is your driver's license, so to speak. And so what this genealogy is here for is to identify who these individuals are, Aaron and Moses, so that, you know, there likely could be other people named Aaron, right? Or, you know, there could be no question as to who we're talking about. And so we can just go through this really quickly. But the idea here is that it's talking about those who, you know, who Moses really is. And there are some people who are mentioned here that we will deal with as we go along. But verse 14, it says, these are the heads of the fathers' houses, the son of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel were Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. These are the families of Reuben. And the sons of Simeon were Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of Canaan, of a Canaanite woman. These are the families of Simeon. And then these are the names of the sons of Levi. And then, so this is where Aaron and Moses, they descended from the tribe of Levi. And so Reuben and Simeon, who were the older brothers of Levi, were mentioned. And so you kind of go to the third son and you stop there. So you won't see in this genealogy mention of the other children of Jacob after that were born after Levi. And so we have Levi according to their generations. You have Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. And the years of the life of Levi were 137. The sons of Gershon were Libni and Shimei according to their families. And the sons of Kohath were Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uzziel. And the years of the life of Kohath were 133. The sons of Merari were Mahali and Mushi. These were the families of Levi according to their generations. Now, Amram took for himself Jochebed, his father's sister, as wife, and she bore him Aaron and Moses. And so there you see Aaron and Moses coming into this. And the years of the life of Amram were 137. The sons of Izhar were Korah, Nepheg, and Zikri. And the sons of Uzziel were Mishael, Elzaphan, and Jithri. Aaron took to himself Elisheba, daughter of Aminadab, sister of Nashon, as wife, and she bore him Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And so those are some names, and Nadab and Abihu, who will come up later. The sons of Korah were Asher and Elkanah and Abiasaph. These are the families of Korah. Eleazar, Aaron's son, took for himself one of the daughters of Putiel as wife, and she bore him Phinehas, another name that will come up later. And it says, these are the heads of the fathers of the houses of Levi, according to their families. And verse 26, these are the same Aaron and Moses to whom the Lord said, bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt according to their armies. And so, again, we're making sure that the reader does not confuse Aaron and Moses for anyone else, and to make it clear that these are the deliverers that the Lord sent to the children of Israel, and not any other. Verse 27, these are the ones who spoke to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring out the children of Israel from Egypt. These are the same Moses and Aaron. And it came to pass on the day the Lord spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, that the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I am the Lord. Speak to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say to you. But Moses said before the Lord, behold, I am of uncircumcised lips, and how shall Pharaoh heed me? And so he doubles down on that statement. But again, the answer to that question of how shall Pharaoh heed me, it's not because of Moses himself, it's because of God. It's really because of Christ that we are fit to serve him. And I notice I did use the word and the name Christ, even though this is taking place before Jesus went to the cross. But Jesus went to the cross for all, those before the cross and those who were there at the time of the cross and those after the cross. So, it's God who makes Moses suitable and fit to do what he has told him to do. Chapter 7. So the Lord said to Moses, see, I have made you as God to Pharaoh, and Aaron, your brother, shall be your prophet. And so essentially here, the Lord is going to be speaking to Moses and giving him commands. But it will be Moses that will be appearing before Pharaoh and not God himself. And so what Moses is saying, he is essentially like God to Pharaoh. But as we know, God made this arrangement where Aaron will be the one who would be speaking on behalf of Moses, because Moses felt that he was not able to speak eloquently. And so essentially Aaron, his brother, is going to be like a prophet. He's going to be the spokesman on behalf of Moses. Verse 2, it says, you shall speak all that I command you, and Aaron, your brother, shall tell Pharaoh to send the children of Israel out of the land. And so as we can see, you know, as this is unfolding and as we go along, the Lord really made every step very clear to Moses. There was no guesswork in any of this. The Lord is telling Moses what to do and how this is going to go step by step by step. And so all that Moses has to do is just do exactly what the Lord tells him to do and say exactly what he tells him to say. And it doesn't even matter how he says it. You know, before Moses was talking about the degree to which, you know, he has, you know, eloquence to speak, but, you know, it doesn't matter. He could just stand up there and say, you know, let my people go. It doesn't matter what, you know, he sounds like. All he has to do is just say those words, that whatever it is that the Lord tells him to do, and the Lord is going to be faithful to Moses, and he will bring all the things to pass that he said he would bring to pass. Verse 3 says, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt. And so that there we see for the first time something that, you know, gives people a lot of, you know, it creates a lot of questions in people's minds, you know, like, so essentially what it's saying here, what it appears to be saying is that the Lord is the one who's going to make Pharaoh sort of do what he does, you know, that he's going to make, he's going to cause Pharaoh to not allow Egypt to go. And so, you know, it's almost seems like it's unfair or something, like he's going to make Pharaoh not allow them to go, and then he's going to punish Pharaoh for doing so. But this word harden really means that he's going to strengthen Pharaoh's heart. And so I think it's a little bit different than the idea that the Lord is going to make Pharaoh resist what he is telling him to do and then punish him. And as we go along, we'll talk some more about that, because I think that it there's some application there that will really make sense. Verse 4 says, "But Pharaoh will not heed you, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them." And so here, a couple of things I want to say. The first thing is that right here in verses 4 and 5, the Lord really lays out what his purpose is in all of what he's going to do in terms of all of these signs and wonders. So first off, going back to verse 3, when it says that he's going to multiply, that the Lord's going to multiply his signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, what the Lord is going to do, you know, one of the things that we have to understand, I think we all are familiar with what's going to take place with all these different plagues and everything, but these plagues are not haphazard or random. These plagues are all deliberate to accomplish particular purposes that God has in mind. The first of which is to let Pharaoh know that he is dealing with a God that is greater than all the gods of Egypt. So a lot of these plagues will be dealing with things that the Egyptians worshipped and showing God's power over these false gods. And so the first thing is that he's going to do this so that that Pharaoh will know that he's dealing with the true and the living God. And that is going to come back to that, the whole point of the hardening of the heart. But we'll get to that as we continue through chapter 7. But essentially, there are three things that the Lord is seeking to accomplish here. And he lays it out in verses 4 and 5. The number one is that he wants to get his people out of Egypt. You see here in verse 4, it says, "To bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt." So that is one key important purpose that the Lord has in showing his signs and wonders and in getting Pharaoh to release the children of Israel. Now, that particular purpose is not only sort of personal to these individuals who are being set free. We have to understand that Israel is the nation where the Messiah will come from. And so it's not only important to God, it is critical to him that he gets his people out of this land, because they're in some way they're Egypt would be standing in the way of God's plan with regard to the Messiah. And so the stakes are really high. This is, and so we know just from that the zeal of God is going to overcome anything that Pharaoh would try to do, because this is, it's all about God's plan to redeem the entire world, not just the children of Israel, but the entire world is riding on all of this. The second thing is that we see at the very last words in verse 4 is by great judgments. And so the second thing is that these plagues that God will bring upon Egypt will be to judge Egypt, not only for enslaving the Jews, but primarily because of what they did in killing the children. You know, all those male children that they told to cast into the Nile and everything else, the Lord is going to judge them for that. And that is a very just judgment that the Lord will bring upon Egypt. And then lastly, verse 5 gives the last reason, is that the Lord wants the Egyptians to know that he is the Lord, so that they would come to know that Yahweh is God, is the true and the living God. So instead of all of those false gods that they were worshiping. Verse 6, then Moses and Aaron did so just as the Lord commanded them, so they did. And Moses was 80 years old and Aaron was 83 years old when they spoke to Moses. And one thing we can take from verse 7, looking at their age, is that, you know, age is not an excuse when it comes to serving God, because here they were 80 years of age. Verse 8, then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, when Pharaoh speaks to you, saying, show a miracle for yourselves, then you shall say to Aaron, take your rod and cast it before Pharaoh and let it become a serpent. And so in verse 9 here, the Lord anticipates what Pharaoh will say and what he will ask of them. The point is that, you know, all along we've been talking about the fact that in Egypt they had thousands of these gods, of these false gods and everything. And so they're used to having people show up and say that they, you know, that they have this god or whatever. And the way that they went about to prove that a god was real is that there needed to be some kind of a demonstration, some kind of a sign or wonder, something that would show that this god really was powerful. And so God, he anticipated that Pharaoh would do that, because that's what they did. And so that's why he said, when that happens, then now you just take your rod and cast it before Pharaoh and let it become a serpent. So that will be the show of power that will be an answer to Pharaoh's request. Verse 10, it says, so Moses and Aaron went into Pharaoh, and they did so just as the Lord commanded. And Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a serpent. And so everything is happening just the way the Lord planned it and said it would. But in verse 11 starts, it says the word but. It says, but Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers, so the magicians of Egypt, they also did like manner with their enchantments, for every man threw down his rod and they became serpents. And so here, this is again something that they probably are used to, right? People being able to show some kind of sign or wonder or whatever. But Pharaoh had a whole set of wise men and sorcerers. So these would be people who were steeped in the magic arts and sorcery and very satanic, basically. But all these different false gods. And so they had the ability to do different kinds of what we call supernatural things as well. But they weren't doing them under the power of God. They were doing them under demonic power, which is a very a real thing. And so this would be now a situation where they're now opposing God. And so that's how you know it's demonic. But they're basically going to show that they can do the exact same thing. And then now, based upon what happens, it will be a demonstration of which of these gods are more powerful. And so we see in verse 12 what does indeed happen, and that is, it says, but Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods. And so this is basically God's way of showing that God, Yahweh, right, the true and the living God, is superior to all of these other gods, because in this case, the lesser, right, these lesser serpents or lesser gods were eaten or devoured by the greater. This is what occurred here. And so now in verse 13, we're going to see this these words again. It says, and Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them as the Lord had said. And so this is the place where I think that, you know, if we stop and contemplate what's taken place, that we can begin to understand a little bit better, in my view, what this means when it says that God, you know, will harden Pharaoh's heart, or that Pharaoh's heart grew hard. And this is also a very instructive thing, and it's a very, I would say, it's a sad thing. But the reality is, the way I see this is that when God reveals himself to us, whether it be by, you know, the Lord revealing himself through the gospel, like someone comes and reveals the gospel to you, or they tell you of their testimony, so basically of the miracle that God did in their life, in changing their life, that is like a sign and wonder of the greatness of God. Or, you know, anything that where the Lord is revealing to you and you can see the power of God. And again, the Lord is doing these things within their way of thinking, within their mindset, within their culture. Pharaoh knew what this meant. Pharaoh knew that when the Aaron's rod swallowed up the rods of all these others, that was a strong showing that this God is greater than all of these gods that they worshiped. He's the true and the living God. And so when he rejects that, when he, in the face of seeing that, he says, I still don't believe it. Every time you do that, you harden your heart before God. And so it's just like it is today in life, right? You have a person, and let's say they're a teenager. Somebody comes and speaks the gospel to them, and they say they reject it. The heart gets a little bit harder, right? And then they grow up, and maybe the next time they're in their 20s and they hear the gospel and they reject it, they get harder. And it keeps going until they're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. And so you get to the point where your heart is so hard that it becomes almost impossible for you to then turn your life. It's not impossible, but it just gets harder and harder, and, you know, more and more difficult for you to become a believer, because in the face of seeing the Lord revealing himself to you and everything, you have rejected the Lord. That's the sort of the way that I'm really seeing what is taking place here with Pharaoh's heart growing harder. And so verse 14 says, so the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hard. He refuses to let the people go. So I'm going to stop right here, because we're going to now, from this point on, we're going to go into the various plagues that the Lord is going to bring upon Egypt. And I want to take all of those together. But we'll stop here in the middle of this account as it's unfolding. And we'll pick up next week where we are actually... next week, I'm going to be out of town, so we'll have a guest speaker, and so we'll pick up in 2 weeks from now.